Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter, and I just want to let you know that if you're a Wing Chun practitioner, especially from the WT or Leung Ting line, and you want to get really personalized intensive private training with me, you can now apply to do an immersion course with me here in NYC, or if you like the sun, in my Florida home near Orlando. These courses are for instructors or anyone who's serious about learning the art in detail and working hard. I teach in program blocks like Siunam Tao, Chum Kyu, Biu Chi, and Wooden Dummy, and those include the Chi Sao Theory, fighting applications, and training methods as well. If you're really serious about learning Wing Chun, check out the link in the description below to find out about applying for a spot. And while you're here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, like this video, and share it on your social media platforms. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps. On today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of double hook punches, lots of, I ain't gonna tell you what the double pak sao is, homie. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Sifu. What's Gucci with you?
Yeah, well, what's Gucci is apparently your style here. So I noticed when you showed up to the podcast today, you are, now for our audience members, apologize for those who are just listening to us on audio, but you are not just wearing a sport jacket, you are wearing a suit. And as I pointed out when you came in, that's not an off-the-rack suit. That is a custom-cut suit.
I don't know what you're implying, though.
Well, what I'm implying is it's a podcast. I know. Look at me. I'm wearing a One Punch Man t-shirt, right? And sweatpants.
I love that t-shirt.
Yeah, but
I wish I had that t-shirt.
Yeah, as you walk in like a custom-cut suit, looking like a budget-ass pit bull, all right? So what is up with, are you trying, because, you know, nah. I don't want to say anything, but our sound guy, Mikey Dean, recently is getting vibes that you're turning into a bit of a diva.
This is the implication that has no, like,
no base, no merit?
Nothing.
Okay. I was gonna say, signs of a guilty conscience is the fact that you went straight to say, what are you implying?
Yeah, exactly. When you know damn well what's going on. So it's like, well, because it's, first of all, it started with the diva-like behavior, you know,
so?
Like, you know, you just, like, we would all be set up to do the podcast, uh-huh. And you're like, oh, I need another 5 minutes to get all the questions right. And 30 minutes later, you're like, oh, no, I'm almost ready.
It's just preparation.
It's like preparation H is what it's like, okay? You're a pain in the ass. That's what's going on. You are like preparation
osh.
H. All right?
Pain in osh.
Pain in osh. Osh. All right? Yeah. And then here we are, ready to record a normal-ass episode of the Kung Fu Genius, which, by the way, your new nickname is now, I'm the KFG, you are the TFG.
TFG.
That fucking guy, all right? The Kung Fu Genius and that fucking guy, the KFG and the TFG, all right?
Uh-huh.
And here you come, look dressed to the nines, trying to make the host of this podcast look ghetto ass.
Anybody that's listening can tell I'm not trying to upstage anything.
The suit is
the terrible suit.
I see what you're doing there.
It's terrible suit.
And it's a nice suit. What are you talking about? You can cut very well.
It's my worst suit.
Listen to you. That was it. It's my worst suit. All right? You come in here dressed to the nines.
I got to go to work after.
This is just
job.
Your work clothes.
The other job.
The other job, right, yeah.
It's something he just threw together.
Yeah, something I just threw
literally,
together.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally.
No. That's not something you just threw together. You thought about that all week about coming in that way, right? I'll tell you what, though, Mr.
Wow.
TFG.
Wow.
I'm not going to make this mistake again. I'm not going to show. You ever have to go to something and you're never sure, like, how should I dress for this, right? You're like, should I go more casual? And you ever make, like, the mistake goes both ways. Sometimes you dress up, you show up, and, like, everyone is dressed really well. Or you dress really well, you go, everyone's casual. And then other times you go casual, everyone's dressed really well, right? Now I have a feeling like you're trying to upstage me in my own show.
Totally unintentional.
No, it's okay. No, I get it.
You sound like Arnell in Hong Kong.
Which
when
is?
I wore the DJ Dre.
Oh, the fancy
to Chan Chi Man.
Yeah.
Dinner.
Looking
I
like all fancy.
I wasn't trying to upstage anybody.
No, we get it. No, Clearly, there's a pattern of this. All right, I'll tell you what, Dre. All right, I'm not gonna make this mistake again.
No, I'm not gonna.
The next episode of the Kung Fu Genius, I'm not gonna look like you're wearing a One Punch Man shirt, looking like a ghetto ass. All right, I get it. I see what you're doing here.
It's nothing.
No, it's nothing, not gonna happen again.
Nothing being done.
I get it. I get it.
There's nothing being done
here. Yeah. No, it's cool. It's cool. I get it. So anyway, here we are in another AMA.
AMA.
All right. Ask me anything. All right. We had a post. We got some questions.
Amabama.
And hopefully I have some answers. So let's get to it.
Let's do it. All right. First up, we got my man Alex. Oh, no, no. My bad. My bad, Alex.
What?
Axel. Fucking dyslexic that shit. Dyslexia.
All right.
Axel Stone. That's a cool fucking name, man. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. I have a question.
Okay.
Have you ever had any situations when you've had to use Wing Chun or just defend yourself in general?
I feel like I have to defend myself from you all the time.
Well, how so?
All right. This subtle flexing that's going on is forcing me to use a lot of like verbal bong sounds here, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, I live in New York City, but I don't live in a dangerous part of New York City.
All right.
What is the type of self-defense that we use?
Brevoid Projects.
Yeah, I don't live where you used to be until you moved on up to the east side, to the deluxe apartment in the sky, all right? I see what you're doing here, all right?
So that sounds striking.
What is the, you familiar. Know, people always, when you think about self-defense, people always assume that it's automatically physical, all mm-hmm. right? And often people conflate fighting and self-defense. These are two different things, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Self-defense is something you need to do to protect yourself from aggression. And aggression comes in many different forms. And aggression can also start at one form and escalate into physical, right? But when you're in New York City for any period of time,
every second,
pretty much going on the subway is like an exercise in like learning how to avoid trouble, learning how to de-escalate stuff. And as many visitors, you know, it's even like self-defense against bad smells and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
You're obviously, you've been living in New York far longer than I have. You've lived here your whole life. But everyone who's been in New York for at least a month learns this lesson. If you're waiting for the subway,
yeah,
and the subway is packed,
yeah,
and one car is not, you don't go, hey, look, there's no one in that car.
Let me get
Let's
in
go
there.
In that one.
Hell no.
There's
Hell
a reason, no. and it's... everyone knows the reason, okay? All right?
You can't see it as the train's pulling in, but once you get in, you look, oh,
and you go,
see someone laying there, you're like, got me, and then the train doors close and lock you in.
You're stuck, and you're wishing you had a gas mask or something like that going on in there, right?
Oh,
so, I mean, look, when you're younger, when you're in a kid, you get into scraps, okay? And I think a lot of martial arts instructors who don't fight competitively, I'm not a competitor, I'm not a sport martial artist or whatever, they're gonna hearken back to the days of the playground and go, yeah, I've been in a bunch of fights and stuff like this. Look, the scraps that I've been in my life when I was younger, when I was in school, this is, I think, part of every young boy's kind of, you know, growing up. You get in little scraps, you push, kick, whatever, like that kind of stuff. Do I equate those things to fighting experience? No, these are things every boy has to get his ass kicked and kick an ass or two growing up, all right? This is part of your formative years. I did some karate tournaments when I was younger. I did that sport jiu-jitsu tournament with James DeMille, which I've talked about a million times. And, you know, the last time I had to, like, physically defend myself
Boss
against someone.
Fuck his ass.
All right. was the day Obama was elected. All right. And I always remember that. All right. And I'll always remember that That's because, so well, that was a very easy day to remember. So it was with the 2008, mm-hmm. I think it's 2008, right? November.
Yeah, November 5th or something like that.
Yeah. And I was living in Midtown at that time.
You're right.
I was living in Midtown at that time. So pretty safe area in Hell's Kitchen, despite the name. It's actually a very, very safe area to live in. Oh, you live in Hell's Kitchen. It's like, yeah, they call it Clinton now, all right? but no one who actually lives in Hell's Kitchen calls it Clinton. Everyone just calls it Hell's. The real estate agents tried to change it to make that sound nicer, but no New Yorker calls that area Clinton, right? And you know, and then in another part of Midtown, a little further south, is called Chelsea. And there's actually a border area, called Chelsea Clinton. There's actually a border area between Clinton and Chelsea. And I saw there was like some community center. It was called the Chelsea Clinton Community Center, but it's not named after her. It's like the Chelsea-Clinton, like, you know. And I just thought like, oh, that's kind of funny, right?
Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah, so like,
it's my neighborhood.
So that is what, that's 2008. So, I mean, we're coming on now, what, like 14 years ago, all right? And, you know, did people come into the school who, you know, came under the guise of wanting to try it out, and halfway through an intro lesson, they get a little testy or whatever, and you have to kind of do something to them? That stuff is, am I going to say that that's a fight?
No.
I mean, like, it doesn't qualify. Even if it gets a little weird or awkward or whatever, it's like, so what is the bar, right? Like, I'm not the guy who's going to go out there and say like, oh yeah, man, like, I'm getting in fights all the time. Most of the traditional martial art guys, in general, don't get in nearly as many fights as they say they do, right? And there's some people, like a good friend of mine, Carl Albright, who back in the day, he was fighting all the time, right? So, I don't know. I feel awkward talking about these things because this is, you know, getting into street fights, all right? I've been able to successfully avoid that most of my life because I'm not an asshole, all right?
If you're asking for it, you kind of just attract it.
I mean, there's usually the big number for people who claim to have all these fights in traditional martial arts, not like in competitive. Because if you're in competitive martial arts and you have a record, well, also like, oh, I'm 20 and 5 in kickboxing. Like, you have a record, right? But usually the people who've gotten in all these like street fights because they worked as a bouncer, they did, it's always 300. That seems to be the number, all right?
That's the number.
That people are like, yo, I have 300 street fights and I've been undefeated. Now, when you talk about street fights, if you're a tough guy, you know, you're athletic, you're strong or whatever, and you say you've gotten 300 street fights, okay? So you have to start to do the math on stuff like that, and you have to think about what those implications actually mean, right? So if someone worked as a bouncer, let's say they worked as a bouncer for 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay? So
I'm about 3 years
bouncer. Yeah. So if you worked as a bouncer for 5 years, and during that time, you got in 300 street fights. Okay? 300. Okay? So what is that? My math is terrible. What is that? That's 50 fights a year, right?
That's, yeah. You right? Gotta or, have or one
70,
every week.
Or 70 fights.
Every
no, it's 70 fights a year. Right? It would be
every
70.
Weekend.
Yeah.
You got to have at least two every weekend.
Yeah. No, it would.
For those numbers.
Man, my math is fucking terrible. No, it would be like somewhere around 60 fights, something like that, right?
Yeah, no. It's
about 60 fights a year. Yeah. All right? That's why I teach Kung Fu for a living. My math is not so good, right? But I'm very good at statistics because, you know, about 87% of statistics are made up on the spot. I'm really good with statistics. Very scientific, right? So you're getting, in average, 60 fights a year, okay?
Now, these are fights or just actual throwing people out?
I mean, well, that's the thing. Is you grabbing someone and telling them, is that a fight?
I don't know if that's a fight.
All right?
That doesn't qualify either.
Well, but people, so the problem is, like, are you actually, like, you are there, the other person is there, and you're trading punches?
That's a fight.
Let's give them that, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's see. So 60 times out of the year, you and another dude are standing across from each other and you are trading fists and grabs and punches and kicks, okay?
Yeah. I can see a melee.
Wait a minute, Dre. I'm not done.
All right.
60. So in 5 years, your bouncer records 300 fights undefeated, bro. That's 60 a year. So how many is that a month? All right? That's what, is that five? That's five? Or no?
Yeah, or yeah, roughly about
five a month.
That's about five
a month,
half,
right?
Six.
Yeah, so about 5 times 12 is 60, right?
Yeah.
So it's five fights a month.
It's kind of approximate because, you know, like, a year is actually 365
yes.
days. So it could
yes.
be a little more, could be a little less, but it's still a lot.
Right. So you got five fights a month. That's slightly more than 1 week. What kind of asshole are you to get in so many fights? So many fights.
Yeah.
Like, you would literally have to seek it out, or you would have to be, like, the most unreasonable person in dealing with any kind of verbal confrontation to literally get in that, to get in 300 fights in 5 years, okay? Damn. You're doing five, but now think, let's pretend it takes you 10 years to get to 300 street fights, all right? Which is the big number that many people have been undefeated in 300 street fights, okay?
Mm.
That just cuts it in half.
Over you're still, a bouncer career.
You're still getting into about two and a half fights a month, okay? every single month, you got to punch and kick. Look, professional fighters don't even fight that much, all right? So when I hear, like, a lot of the records of these guys who are like, you know, my ring is on the streets, bro. I don't fight in the ring or whatever, right? You have to go like, I think there's something wrong with your math. You know, or if your math is true, you're just an insufferable asshole, right?
Possibly they just like beating up children.
Well, yeah, exactly, no, wait. Right? Like adults.
That's a good point because a lot of these nightclubs are full of drunken.
Yeah. So you're beating up a bunch of drunkards, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you write that on the wall. Like, yo, man, beat their shit out of five drunk dudes this month, right?
Yeah.
And so I tend to believe if you're someone that teaches martial arts.
You're dead sober, yeah.
You teach martial arts on a regular basis. Like, when do you have all the time to get into street fights? And how can you, on one hand, tell your students, like, look, fighting is very dangerous. You want to try to de-escalate a situation to avoid it. Because if you actually have to fight, you have to be ready that no matter how good you are, no matter what you know, there's always a chance you're going to get injured. And we know this because this is people win fights, or at least I should say they protect themselves, which doesn't mean they knock the guy out. And they still have a black eye and is scratched up and all that stuff. And they're the winner.
Yeah.
People win fights in competitive sport fighting and their face looks like it went through a meat grinder and they have their hand raised. All right. So you have to realize that there's always a huge potential for risk when you fight. So how can you teach your students to defend themselves and teach them the high stakes in real street fighting and yet paradoxically always get lured into fights yourself all the time, right? It just really doesn't make any sense. And like, you know, do I have stories about someone coming in and trying something and this, that? Yeah. Am I going to go on the Kung Fu Genius podcast and be like, oh, Dre, let me tell you about this one time this dude totally tried to grab me in the middle of class, so it wasn't like a real street fight, but people are going to make it seem like it was. Like, yeah, and then he grabbed me and then like punched him, I put him on the ground and like I had him pinned and he couldn't do anything, all right? Yeah, in a controlled demonstration, someone decided to do something tricky and then you defend yourself and then you put that as a notch on your wall as a fight. I don't know. And also, like, if people have all these fights, you ever have a buddy or someone you know who like comes back to tell you about some fight they were in and they can tell it to you in all this detail.
Oh man.
And then he grabbed me and then like I moved my hand like this and I took his bat and I punched him and then I did this thing and then he tried to do that. And it's like, if you ever been in a fight.
No, you
don't
remember.
You don't remember shit. You remember a couple things. And maybe the only way you remember what actually happened is when your boys tell you later, like, oh man, when that guy grabbed you, you did this. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, that's right. And then they're kind of filling in the gaps for you. But like that, when people go through this like simulator, right? I remember like this one Wing Chun guy, not one of my students, someone else was telling me how like he had done the bong sao, lap sao, back fist against someone in a bar. And then the guy did this, and then he did that, and then he did this. And when he's going through this whole thing, already in my mind, I'm playing elevator music. I'm just drowning it out. Because it's like, this is bullshit, all right? So goes no fight, and so is no real fight ever told in hindsight, right? So I just, I mean, like, you know, it just seems kind of silly to talk about these things. And I feel very self-serving, like, yeah, let me tell you about my street fights, bro. You know, I'm not like, you know, one of the greatest fighters on YouTube who has a tremendous amount of fight experience is this guy called Bernard Beardy McAllister. He's a former IFC champion, all right? And he trained like Bruce Lee for a year and it almost killed him.
Man.
And that guy, really, it's amazing. He never shows his face, though.
Yeah,
I can imagine from his stories, the dude must be really badass.
I mean, he's probably sought after.
As an authority on Bruce Lee, for one. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people want to know how Bruce Lee died also. He's not just an expert in martial arts. He's a foremost authority on Bruce Lee. And if you want, just ask him. He knows everything.
He knows.
And people ask him every day about Bruce Lee's death.
Check him out.
And he's already put the whole thing to rest a few years back in a video. So anyway, what's the next question?
Wait, but
what?
You didn't answer the question.
What's the question?
What was the 2008 day of Obama election? And
two dudes tried to jump me and it didn't work out so well for them. But for me to didn't even
happened?
Tell the detail. I don't talk about this stuff. Kind of. Okay, look.
They found out who he really voted for.
They found out who. I wrote in Donald Trump back then, right?
Impressioned.
No, so actually, I mean, maybe this story can be kind of helpful because, you know, like talking about when you're in New York, one of the most important things is to be aware of of your surroundings, right? And this is a classic situation where I was not paying any attention, and I kind of paid the price for it. So I was talking to your
Sihang. They ran up on you.
I was talking to your Sihang, Mike Yan. I was actually on the phone with him when this happened, right? And then later, he's like, yo, what happened? I'm like, I had to punch two dudes because the phone dropped, right? And he's like, what's going on? So he's like on the phone when this thing happened. He hung up. He didn't know what had happened. So I was walking down the street. It's Midtown. So it's part of Midtown you don't think is very dangerous. It was actually 43rd Street between 9th and 10th Avenue.
I know exactly.
All right? There are two apartment buildings that are connected on there.
Mr. Biggs is on the corner of 43rd and 9th.
Yes, yes.
No, 43rd and 10th.
Biggs. So it was, I remember that because one of my friends lives in that building there.
On your way to Mr. Biggs,
bro. No, I was on my way home. It was after teaching. It was like a Thursday night or Tuesday. Tuesday, it was election day, right?
Got it.
So and for some reason I came back really late because it was like 11:30, something like that. So I don't know what I was doing at the school, maybe whatever. So I'm walking and then I decide, usually I walk up 9th Avenue. And then at that time I lived on 49th Street. So I would walk all the way up and then I would cut over on 49th. But for some reason, I'm like, let me cut through 43rd and then go up 10th. So it was like the rare time I decided to like not walk on my normal like route or whatever, right? And that's a very nice area. It's a nice apartment building there. It's not like, you know, for people who are unfamiliar with New York, there's some sketchy areas in New York.
Actually, I almost got into a fight on that block too. I'm legit like...
Yeah, 40...
Remembering that right
but
now.
But in theory...
2008.
Yeah. but in theory, 40... Probably. But in theory, 43rd Street between 9th and 10th Avenue is not a sketchy spot. All right?
You got D'Agostino's right there.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I'm walking down there and I'm on my phone. And I remember I actually saw the two dudes across the street, but they were ahead. But I was talking on the phone to Mike and I wasn't paying any attention. So literally classic New York mistake number one. You know, you see some dudes kind of turn around and look at you from across the street and like you need to pay attention to that. But I was like, I don't know. So Mike Yan is a very distracting person, right?
Yeah, okay.
And you know, this is about 2008, so you don't have all the fancy Bluetooth. So I'm like literally holding my whatever Nokia bullshit or BlackBerry or whatever the hell I had at that time, right? So I'm walking. They were ahead, and then I didn't pay any attention. And what they did is they went behind a car that was up ahead that was parked on the side of the street. And so I'm walking, and as I go by, the one dude just jumped out from behind the car and then grabbed my jacket and put his forearm across and they kind of like pushed me against the there's an apartment building right there, right? So they pushed me against there and then the two dudes are like, yeah, what's going on? Yo, they're like, you know, they do that typical New York thing. People have never seen anyone get mugged in New York. What muggers often do in New York is they just say a bunch of shit to discombobulate you. Like, yeah, son, what's up, son? What's going on, son? Like all that kind of thing, right? And then so like, you know, I'm there and suddenly I'm in a situation. I'm like, oh, shit. Like I dropped my phone. I wasn't aware. You know, it was like, had I even known those people were there, I would have walked the other way. I would have put my hands up. I would have kept distance. But, it's the classic surprise attack. Yeah. And it's a difference between social violence, which normally escalates from a verbal situation, to predatory violence, which is like these guys have pre-planned this kind of thing and they've clearly have done it before. Mm-hmm. So the guy's grabbing me. And so the one guy's in front of me, he's grabbed me across like this. The other guy's right next to me and they're very, very close. And basically they want my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just gotten back from Hong Kong. All right. So yeah. I got back from Hong Kong like a week earlier. And when I was in Hong Kong, you know, my now wife, at that time we weren't married, while I was in Hong Kong, she gave me a wallet to use while I was in Hong Kong, like, so I could put like the Hong Kong bills are bigger than US dollars.
All right.
So if you have like a thin like wallet for American dollars and like the Hong Kong cash like sticks out of that like that, right? So you need to get like a special wallet.
Hong Kong style wallet.
And all so, right. But it was a ladies' wallet from Agnes B, like this like designer ladies' wallet, right? I had like 30 Hong Kong dollars, which is like nothing.
Hong Kong dollars.
And I had my Hong Kong octopus card, which is the, you know, the Metro card over there. But I did have like one debit of my actual US debit cards in there, right? But I had not yet converted my wallet over to my American wallet. For some reason, I still had that Hong Kong wallet in my pocket, right? And so they're like, they want my wallet. And I remember I pulled it out and I showed it to the guy. And the guy goes, what the F is this? Because it's like total lady's wallet, right? And then I'm like, oh, well, if you don't want it, I go to, he's like, no, 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 no. And then he takes it, right? And they wanted my bag. My bag had my laptop in it. Mm. And at that time, so what, 2008, I didn't have everything on the cloud like now. I didn't have like, a staff, a team, and this stuff isn't all living online in the cloud. Literally everything I had for my school,
yeah.
All the photos, all the advertisements, the documents, valuable. Everything is on that laptop.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't, I don't think I was even using Dropbox, even though that existed. Like, I wasn't even using like stuff you should, like, because I'm an idiot when it comes to that stuff, right?
I don't
right?
think that stuff was even accessible.
Yeah, yeah, like, but I was also like, in 2008, I was still more or less managing everything myself. I would have some students help me out here and again, but I was kind of running everything, right? Mm-hmm. So my entire, all of City Wing Chun was on that computer. And they wanted it.
Gotta protect that.
And so I made a judgment that, like, so if my students would ask me what to do in that situation, I would tell them literally to do the exact opposite of what I did, because it's not worth it. What's in your bag, it's not worth it. If these guys are gonna hurt you, if these guys are gonna do something, give them your freaking wallet, right? It doesn't mean like the pride of like, I'm a martial arts instructor, should be able to beat these dudes up. But there are two dudes in front of you that got you next to the wall. And we're talking about stuff, all right? You want to live another day and not just get into some kind of weird all-out kind of, fight or something like that, right? So, but then I gave them the wallet and then they wanted my computer. And in that moment, I was like, in my mind, I'm like, no, all right? So I just decided I'm going to make a judgment and not give them this, right? But the problem is that I was in a bit of a predicament because the one guy, he's grabbing me with his forearm across my chest, which means that the kind of straight centerline punches out of the equation. Also, the other problem is with multiple attacker scenarios, you start wailing on this dude, the other dude's going to jump on you, all right? So all of this stuff, these are things that we address in our class, but these are all things that are kind of flashing very quickly in my mind in terms of like, what is the tactic to get out of here, right? So in my mind, really quickly, I'm thinking, all right, the guy's grabbing me. If I straight punch him and I start hitting this guy, the other guy's going to jump on top of me. I don't actually have an escape route to run because even if I hit this guy and move here, he's leaning on that side and that guy's on the other side. I mean, they know what they're doing. They kind of corner you.
Yeah.
So you don't have an escape. So I was thinking, and this is where, when you practice a martial art like Wing Chun, which is not about fixed sets and sequences, it's about adaptation and adapting to the situation. You have to basically adapt what you've learned and what you do to the situation, even if that adaptation is not necessarily something you've done in class. Right. You need to create adaptations on the fly. So in Wing Chun, in the third form of Byuji, we have the hook punch, which is a very tight hook. It's not a sloppy swing. It's a very tight hook where you use the turn. But again, it's the same problem. Even though I cannot use the straight punch against this guy, if I hit this guy, the other guy's still going to jump on top of me, right? So I remember in that moment, and I don't know where this came from because I never did this shit in my entire life.
Never practiced it.
I never ever practiced. It's not like, because people tell you like, oh man, I practice this thing all the time. And then these two dudes did to me, I did it to them. It's like, I tend to believe it didn't really work that way, right? Okay. Here I was like really like, okay, making some very quick decisions. I basically realized I have to punch both of these guys at the same time. Who the hell ever does something like that? You ever think, it sounds like some fantasist nonsense. Like, yo, man, he did two punches and hit the guy at the same, like the two dudes at the same time. That's a bunch of bullshit, right? So I just decided, okay, I'm going to hit both of them with the Wing Chun hook punch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, from Byuji.
Because you practice both of them on both sides.
Yeah, but normally you have to do it with a turn. Yeah. But because I have to do both, you cannot turn with both of them. So basically I have to come around. And I have to clock both of these guys right on the chin at the same time. Because otherwise there's no way I'm going to get out of here.
Right.
Okay?
At least stun them for a split.
That's all I need. Run. I don't need to knock them out. Yeah. I just need to survive and get out of here. Right. Yeah. So I did something that we learned in de-escalation training in Europe and Wing Chun. So I just go like, I kind of put my head down. And then the guy who wasn't grabbing me, I saw at least in my mind, I could have made it up. That he was like reaching into his jacket for something, right? So at this point, I'm like, okay, something's going down, right? Mm. They're going to take it and they're going to stab me or something like that, all right? So I just bowed my head down like I was kind of like giving in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just punched both of them in the jaw at the same time. And again, like the situation for that to happen, it, like everything had to line up. I hit both of them and then they kind of buckled a little bit and then I just ran. My wallet, they still had my wallet and that was like, yeah. So they had gotten my wallet,
dirty
right?
Hong Kong.
And then I just start running.
Yeah.
Because I don't, like, if I just hit them and stay there and start, you know, be like, yeah, dude, you got to pound, stay there and pound them and punch them and shit. Right. Like, no. They're two of them and they're one of me, uh-huh. All right? And they're not smaller than me, I'll tell you that much.
All right.
So I make a beeline because I don't want them to catch up to me and I know that they're probably not going to chase me through Midtown. So I just ran. When I turned around, I saw them going the other way and then I called the police and we had a police report and I told the cop what happened. He was like, oh. And then he's like, what do you do? Oh, I teach martial arts. He's like, well, you practice stuff like that? I said, I never did that before in my life, right?
Right, okay.
But he was like, what? And I was like showing them what I did. I'm like, it was the only thing I can do. Yeah. And
my boy was probably the one who showed up to that one.
Right, right. So that was a weird situation. But here's the thing, Drake. Had any one factor been changed in that situation?
Mm-hmm.
If the one guy was close to me, but the other guy stayed back, I don't know if I would have been able to survive that situation. Because the moment I hit that guy's going to jump on top of me, right? So the problem is you say things like, and this is also why I think you have to be very hesitant to tell people about times when you were successful. Because that gives people this idea, well, then if I just do this, everything will be fine. No. Had one factor been changed, one guy was standing a little further away,
yeah.
Or had the guy already brandished a weapon, all right? Or had the guy just come up into me with a weapon, okay? The story would not be funny and would not be cool. So I think people need to be responsible when they tell these kind of stories because I actually hate these questions because this is all macho bullshit. Yeah, let me tell you about the time. And all you're doing is encouraging the idea that fighting for not legitimate reasons is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And every situation you end up in requires punch, kick, and elbow to solve it, right? Because that situation, I escaped. I handled myself pretty well in my estimation. I was still in the IWTA at that time.
Oh,
and I told Sifu Leung Teng about, like, I emailed him that night. I was like, oh, Si Gong, like, this happened.
He
sent me an email and told me everything I did wrong. He's like, no, you should do like that and not and do like this and why you do like that. And literally, I still have the email. I should show it to you. It's crazy,
I would love
right?
to see this email.
But he basically told me, and it's like, and I was just thinking, I don't know if any of his head students in the U.S., if they were put in that situation in a simulator, would have come up with a solution where they would have gotten out there. Because I tell you, it was very scary. You got two dudes grabbing you like that and sending that. It's so. But I'll tell you what, it was a combination of I was lucky and I saw an opportunity and went for it and I was lucky.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so I don't like talking about those things because I don't, it's not about bravado. It's not about being a tough guy. These are teenager questions. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is who can beat up whom and all this kind of stuff. Right. If there's no lesson to be learned in it, I think martial art instructors shouldn't talk about that stuff because it just encourages more violence. Right. So the takeaway is that was a fucked up situation.
Yeah.
And most people I think would be hard pressed to get out of it. I got out of it just because my mind I think a little bit differently than other people. And I was able to see something in there. But had you just changed one thing, 5%, I might not have even survived that night, let alone get out of there, right? So that's why I actually don't like talking about those things, all right?
Mm.
And also, I don't have a treasure trove of those kind of stories anyway. Like, there are other people that get into street fights all the time. Even some of my students, they're like, hey, you know, Sivo, I was getting in a fight last week. And I press them on the details, and I'm like, I think you asked for this situation. I don't think you were pressed into this situation, right? So anyway.
Students. That's plural.
Yeah, plural, right? So anyway.
All right.
Enough of that one.
Let's move along to one of our awesome regulars. Pretty fly for a Filipino guy.
Awesome.
All right. AMA. Sifu Genius. One of my favorite topics that you cover and ruminate from time to time is on the trappings of the ego in Wing Chun. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an Ip Man wannabe practitioner challenging a pro fighter or one proclaims that their lineage has the best Bong Sao, we've seen the toxic effect of ego on the Wing Chun. But I believe that there are two sides to every story. With that said, is there a side of ego that is beneficial or productive to the practice of martial arts? Keep up the good work, team, KFG, and thanks for answering.
All right. Well, that's a good question. So it's kind of a bit of a two-parter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is the ego a good thing? Well, I think it's very difficult to separate your ego from you, all right? I mean, unless you become an aesthetic.
I think we need this ego thing, right? We need it for survival or something.
Look, it's like everything in balance, yeah. Okay? Like, so a little bit of ego is necessary because it's part of how we survive and how we move forward. If you live in a completely blissed out, ego-free environment,
I don't know what that's about.
Well, I mean, there are people like that. They're very selfless, but normally those kind of people live in a monastery and they don't have to worry about like eating and stuff like that. Like everything's kind of taken care of, right?
Okay.
If you and also like maybe there might even be some people who are in certain financial situations where they don't have to hustle for money anymore, right? And then when you hear lessons of someone who's like financially super stable, part of the 1%, like the way you're dressed.
I don't know about that.
All right.
The 1% wears t-shirts and sweats, I heard.
So what are you saying?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I'm not even the 1% of this room right here, all right? Get the hell out of here. So he's the one with the fancy accent, all right? If you're in a situation where you don't have to worry about money, you don't have to worry about sustaining your life or whatever. Yeah, wow, super easy to talk about like how being super nice and ego-free and non-competitive. Of course you're non-competitive. You have a big house, you have a car, you got money, you got disposable income. Super easy to be non-competitive when everyone else has to hustle to even survive. And you can just be like, let me tell you about my awesome worldview. It's like, dude, all right? What are you talking about? The view from where you are is not the same view as other. So one when
reminds
you
me of Owen Wilson in Meet the Fockers.
Right. When
character he plays.
When you hear some of these people, sometimes you're like, okay, well, this person might be in a position in their life where that's an easy thing to be. I think if, you know, a lot of people who have success and have money and have all these things, they're still not happy. But some of them are. And some of them can embrace that kind of attitude. And it's like, is that really the person that you should be taking notes from in terms of being ego-free? And is that necessary for you in your stage of life, right? The ego is always there, in my opinion, unless you're in a situation where it doesn't need to be, i.e. you are financially stable for the rest of your life, or two, you're living in a monastery and you don't need to worry about food and any of those things. Those two situations, yeah, 100%. But for the people who need to hustle to survive, you need to, a little bit of ego needs to be there to improve your station in life, to be a little dissatisfied. Not in the way where you scroll Instagram and you go like, man, everyone else is living so much better than me, because you know that's fake. You're seeing everyone else's highlight reel while you're only seeing the behind the scenes of your own life. So you're comparing all the, like when people tell me like about, oh man, you got this and that and the other things, like, dude, I literally work my ass off. I mean, you know what, you live with me for a while. You know what my schedule is like. I get up in the morning, I'm looking up this stuff, I'm studying this, I'm writing this book, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, like, and then I teach in the evening and then I have my training and then I have to sit across from you and talk to your ass for 2 hours, right? This is work, man.
This is work.
And then people see the podcast come out on Monday and like, wow, amazing, right? But it's literally nothing but work. If you saw my schedule from morning to night, there's nothing glamorous about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like work, it's eating while I'm working and then having time for my kids. And as soon as I, you know, that an hour I have with my kids here, boom, then I'm on to the next thing. And it's like, it's like that, right? And you only see what I post on social media as the fruits of that labor. But that does not represent the majority of what my life looks like. That only represents the end product of lots of different things that I'm doing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing to be envious about, because if you saw how much hard work went into the books that I do and all these other kind of things, they should be better for the amount of time I'm working on that. This podcast should be better for the amount of time I'm putting in. Right?
The rewards,
okay,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, that's a different thing. So it's that type of ego I'm not talking about, because it's easy to scroll through your Instagram, scroll through your Facebook, and look at everyone else's posts and just go like, man, what's going on with me?
That,
like,
stuff is real.
Yeah, you're looking at everyone else's highlight reel,
yeah.
And you're not looking at the struggles. And in your own, your movie of your life is all the stuff you need to do to keep this facade together. Meanwhile, what you see everyone else do is like, oh, I'm at the beach or whatever. And you know, it's like that's the one time they went to the beach that year and they're taking all these photos like they're living that beach lifestyle. And then you go, man, I haven't even been to the beach this year, right? At least that's what when I scroll through social media, the only thing that makes me jealous is seeing people at the beach. I catch a scalp, man, I haven't even been to the beach. All right. People driving fancy cars, whatever. I'm like, oh, that doesn't, whatever, right? It's the beach. No, it's I get jealous beach. About the beach. Okay. All right. So you have to keep it in check. So a little bit of ego is good to kind of keep you moving. Too much ego can make you feel kind of depressed and make and constantly compare yourself to other people and compare your struggles with other people's highlight reels, which is a losing situation, right? So like anything, you know, when is a little bit of ego a good thing? Well, it's good if you can harness it to just be a tiny bit dissatisfied with where you are without you saying that terrible, I'm worthless, I'm no good. Like, there are things that I'm really bad at, but I still enjoy them. And so a little bit of ego is like, I want to improve my abilities there, right? Like in my jiu-jitsu practice, which for me, by the way, is a total side hobby. I'm like barely serious about it. I do it as a side hobby. My thing is, as a Wing Chun person, I just wanted to learn, if I'm grappling with people who know what they're doing, can I avoid getting caught in submissions? I actually don't care about putting someone in an arm lock or a triangle choke or any of those things. And so when I was training, you know, with Magno, with the Valenti brothers, when I do their sparring classes, I just go, okay, this guy's a brown belt, this guy's a purple belt. If I'm playing around with them, can I just stop this person from trying to put me in something bad? So can I learn to avoid the traps that a lot of non-grapplers fall into, right? Yeah. And as a result, that is, and I'm not saying that I'm great at that by any means, but that's the skill set that I wanted to polish, my ability to avoid getting caught in certain things and to escape and get out. As a result, I'm terrible at submissions because I never go for them. I'm just like, the guy's going for an arm lock. I don't want to get caught in the arm lock. I want to avoid this triangle. I want to get out of this. So every time I'm talking to Magno, I'm like, how do you escape from this? How do you escape from this? How do you escape from this? And he always wants to show me like all these like chaining submissions. I'm like, that's super cool. Now, if you did that to me, how do I get out of that? Right? Because like for me, that's the main thing, right?
Okay.
So, but I have a little bit of an ego about that. Like I would, you know, it's a side practice. I would like to be a little bit better at it. Mm-hmm. So I try to get a little bit better at it. So if you can use a little bit of ego to push your abilities without it getting to the point where you go like, oh man, I'm worthless at this. No, you're not. Kung Fu, all right? In the true meaning of Kung Fu, it means your achievement through hard work and effort. Kung Fu is not the name of a martial arts style or a group of martial arts styles. It's become that. It means your achievement through the work and effort that you've done. So what you have to realize is that you may have a high level of Kung Fu in certain categories in martial arts or in a certain martial art or in certain skills in your life, like golfing. You might be really good at you know, doing the drive and hitting that thing, right? And you have very high level of Kung Fu in golfing, right?
That's funny. I've been at Top Golf. Like
I saw that. I see the post there. Yeah, you're missing that stuff left and right, right?
Suck.
And so, but what does that mean? That means your Kung Fu in golfing is very low right now. But the fact that you've already been doing it for a little bit means it's already more than had you not done it at all. So you have a little bit of Kung Fu in golfing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's what you have to do. And having a little tiny bit of dissatisfaction where you go like, I'm not really good, but I'm getting a little bit better. And then you have those incremental gains over time. And that is where you can use your ego in a healthy way if you're just, put it this way, you just be mildly dissatisfied with your skills. Even if you are very bad at something, you have to be gentle with yourself, okay? And feel just a mild, like, it could be a little bit better. And then just search incrementally to improve those things. And even something you're terrible at and can't do at all.
Yeah, most people are too hard on themselves.
Yeah. And some people thrive in that environment, but the self-talk you have in your head, which mostly is unavoidable, you need to still steer it and go like, okay, I cannot kick without falling over, for example, right? So you start working on that and you go like, can I just lift my leg without falling over? And then you get that skill. All right, can I kick now without falling back? All right, now can I kick now with a little bit more power? So having just a little bit to go step by step is a healthy way to use ego. An unhealthy way is one, to tell yourself you're terrible and you suck at it. And the other unhealthy way is to say, I'm in the one Wing Chun lineage that does everything correctly and everyone else does it wrong. So ego, like anything else, should be used in moderation. You know what else should be done in moderation? Moderation. Just kidding. All right, let's go. Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners, are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for KFG fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill out your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to all the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this cool guy on the cover. That's me for those of you listening to us on audio. My Kung Fu Genius column is also in all the new issues, as if you needed another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And now back to me.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Flash Arrow.
All right.
Another cool name, like Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome show, Sifu Genius.
Awesome.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you created an Expendables team,
ooh,
and you were the leader of the team, who would you choose in your team? This includes dead and alive famous stars. Thanks.
Wow. So stars and not characters, I assume. Like not characters out of a movie, right?
Chuck Norris 7 times.
Yeah, yeah, because then it would be like I would have Arnold Schwarzenegger's character from Predator, Commando, all right? Hell, I'd even take Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah. Right.
You just get Running Man. You get all the iterations of Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I would just have Arnold Schwarzenegger from all these films.
All of them.
Conan, all right? Yes. Like, you know, so I would just have like 8 Arnold Schwarzeneggers, you know? I'd be like, this is my crack team right here. Because you would have Arnold Schwarzenegger of all these different
even
skills.
Even True Lies Arnold is really
they're
good.
They're all, yeah, because he would be like the intelligence gathering one. Yeah. Then you would have like the Predator one is like the survivalist.
Yes.
Hey man, right? Get the Sixth Day one. Because then you have two.
Oh yeah, that's right. So I mean, of course, you answer a question like this, you go like, well, how do we cheat the system? This is basically how you answer all these kind of questions. Right. Like, all right, well, okay, well, I'm the Kung Fu Genius, so if I did an Expendables team, of course, Bruce Lee would need to be on that team.
He would have to be.
He would definitely have to be on that team.
Just like...
You know who else would be on that team? Chan Wai Man.
Oh!
That's what's up. Chan Wai Man, like,
that's,
you know, like late 70s, Chan Wai Man, all tatted up, badass, yeah. Chan Wai Man is a badass, all right?
Awesome.
If you guys don't know who Chan Wai Man is, finish this podcast and Google Chan Wai Man. Chan, C-H-A-N, mm-hmm. Y-W-A-I, Man, M-A-N. All right, Chan Wai Man. All right, dude's a total badass. So I would have Bruce Lee, I would have Chan Wai Man.
I can't wait to meet Chan Wai Man.
Yeah, you know who else I would have?
Who?
Lo Mong, the toad from Five Deadly Venoms.
Okay.
All right, yeah, another buddy of ours here. And who else would I get? Of course, it depends on the mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say this is a more kung fu based thing rather than just like a shoot 'em up type thing, all right? Because otherwise, I'm just getting 8 iterations
of our... What's
the kung
fu mission?
Well,
David Carradine.
Going to
how dare you?
Challenge David Carradine's school?
Yeah, David Carradine. David Carradine has cloned himself. There's 100 of them. You need a crack team to kill 100 David Carradines. So you just need eight people to do kung fu to kill 100 David Carradines, right?
That's so
because otherwise, if it was like about like shoot 'em up and guns, I would just get 8 different versions of Arnold Schwarzenegger from the even Conan who wouldn't have a gun. He would just be at a Conan would be there with his sword.
Yeah.
Hey Conan, where's your sword? So we have Bruce Lee, we have Chan Wai. How many is it? 8? Is it 8 total? How many are in the Expendables?
Roughly.
All right, let's just say it's 8, right? So we have Bruce.
Well, every movie they add another 1 or 2, right?
That's right. Okay, so we have Bruce, Chan Wai Man, Lo Mong, and who else? So let's maybe go stateside a little. Okay, I would take Van Damme, all right?
Ooh.
But I'm looking, but Bloodsport Van Damme.
Yeah.
All right. Late 80s saucy Van Damme.
Yeah.
Not the Van Damme we met in Tim Zajoy in 2018. That Van,
no.
That Van Damme can stay at home. That Van Damme should stay at home. All right. Did we ever actually tell this story on the podcast?
We will have to.
Yeah. All right. Well, one day we'll tell our Van Damme story.
Someone will ask about it.
You and I, we've alluded to certain parts of it, right?
Someone will definitely ask about it soon.
Where Dre and I ran into Van Damme in the streets of Hong Kong. All right.
That's awesome.
It's a heartbreaking and funny story at the same time. Okay, so we got late 80s saucy Bloodsport Van Damme. That's the real Van Damage right there, okay?
What about No Retreat, No Surrender Van Damme? What was it?
That's around the same time. Actually, those movies are not that far apart.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're looking pretty much same.
That's a real funny looking Van Damme.
Yeah, Ivan the Russian, right?
Yeah.
Time Cop Van
Damme. No. We get Bloodsport Van Damme. Dude is good. All right. Okay, so we got four. So we got a half hour team right now. Mm-hmm. All right. So
wait, you gotta count yourself in there. You're the leader.
Okay, so then there's five, right? You know, I would get Timok from The Last Dragon. But he has to have the glow. It cannot be pre-glow Timok, all right, or pre-glow Bruce Leroy. No, not too far post. All right, we just need Bruce Leroy in that final scene of The Last Dragon. That's the one you want, where he finally figures out, spoiler alert, that he's the master. Post. All right, yeah.
All right, would you take Show Enough just like for fun shits and giggles?
Okay, the actor who played Show Enough.
Yeah.
Julius McCary. Mm-hmm. He was actually not a martial artist at all. And I believe our good friend Ron Van Cleef actually helped train him for The Last Dragon.
That's what's up.
So I don't think he should be on that list.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah.
Okay, so we have six now. So I need two more. All right. So we have some Chinese action heroes. We have a couple American.
Kung Fu Joe.
Ooh, that's right, Steve James.
Kung Fu Joe might be good.
Yeah, but not...
Because he can bring a couple elements.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu, karate, judo,
and some guns,
and all sorts of shit you ain't never heard of before. Yeah, the late Steve James, man, he was great. Yeah. Especially, you know where he kind of peaked for me martial art-wise in the films is in American Ninja 2.
Okay. Because
then he had learned some stuff. He's using butterfly swords, he's kicking ass. Yeah, so the Steve James would be great.
You probably need a ladies' man in that mix, too.
Hey, well then, let's go French. Go for Cyril Raffaele or David Bell.
No, another van.
You don't know either of them? How dare you?
No, sorry. We didn't grow up. What? I mean, you grew up in what? Australia, eating Vegemite. I don't know those references. I don't know that.
You got Jean-Claude Van.
Oh no, you know.
Bring in Ron Van.
Ron Van Cleef.
Yeah, you got to bring him in.
That's it, Ron Van Cleef.
You got to bring the ladies. He'll bring the ladies.
The team is complete. There you go.
Okay.
Beautiful. Actually is a ladies' man, isn't he? Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
All right.
So what's the next question?
All right. Next up, we got from Dryson.
Is Dryson wearing a suit this week?
I don't know. It doesn't have any photo of him here.
Mm-hmm. I feel like
it just says Dryson.
I feel like he's wearing a tailored suit.
What? All right. Let's hear it.
Hypothetical. You're home, and all of a sudden, you got the bubble guts.
The bubble guts?
You go to the bathroom, drop that Deuce Deuce Bigelow.
Oh, my Jesus.
You're feeling all accomplished and shit after you finish your shit.
This is a window into the psyche of Dryson. Who feels accomplished after dropping a deuce? Like, oh, I did something today.
That's a big.
I just told you what my schedule is like after the bubble guts. Yeah,
free that demon.
Same feeling as like finishing.
I dread to think where the fucking time machine portal is about to end up. By the way,
how do you know it's a time machine
thing? Well, because Dryson normally asks time machine questions and hypotheticals.
I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
You wash up. Come out the bathroom and find yourself in some strange-ass apartment.
Uh-huh.
You're like, time machine looking is around, getting stranger and stranger.
You're looking around like, yo, what the fuck am I all of a sudden?
Yeah.
You make a left, head down the hallway. Behind you, you hear a weird voice in the other room. Some Taiwanese chick saying, don't worry, Bruce. I have some Equajizic in the bathroom. Let me go get it. you duck down behind some furniture. You're like, oh shit, I think I know where I am. She doesn't see you.
I'm on Beacon Hill Road.
Right? You duck down so she doesn't see you.
This is crazy.
I'm reading this, man. I'm reading it as I go.
Wait a minute. In Dreisen's questions, does he have the acting cues in there as well?
It says duck down.
Oh, so it's got the acting cues in there, and you're just because you'd never do this with anyone else's questions.
Look, Dreisen writes good questions, and he puts in, you know, the
acting
directions.
Cues.
Yes.
Acting cues. Wow.
So you duck down so she doesn't see you, right? And she heads into the bathroom, and she says something like, "Holy shit, what's that smell? What the f-?" Do you lock her ass in the bathroom? Or what do you do?
In that situation?
Yeah. You know what's happening.
If I don't let Bruce Lee die, then the world will no longer exist. Because it's Bruce Lee dying is a nexus event that has to happen. Otherwise, the world cannot continue. If I save Bruce Lee, Wing Chun may never get as popular. The UFC may never become a thing. The world will be in nothing but chaos. We will be ruled by apes.
So you'll let her get the Igwe Jizi and come back out the bathroom?
Oh, hell no. I'm saving Bruce Lee. Are you kidding me? I'm just mucking around. I would lock her ass in there, and I would lift up Bruce Lee with his 120 pounds, okay. And I would run him
run
out.
I would
I would call 999 in Hong Kong. It's not 911. 999. I say, hey.
How you got a phone on you?
Huh? No, Betty Ting Pei has a phone in her apartment. That's right, the one that she called Raymond Chow.
Raymond Chow's there too, by the way.
I'd kick him right in the nuts. Boom! All right? Just one solid kick right in the nuts. All right?
The German side of you is saying no, no, no.
Yeah. And I would call.
Yeah.
I would call the hospital. All right? I would call Baptist University Hospital because Baptist Hospital is literally right there. Okay?
Wow.
Queen Elizabeth Hospital is a when we stayed in Hong Kong in the Jordan area.
Yeah.
It's just right there but in Yau Ma Tei and Jordan area, right? Bruce is all the way in Kowloon Tong, but he's not just in normal Kowloon Tong. He's in Kowloon, which is the southern peninsula of like the part of Hong Kong that's still attached to the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
It has these mountains that kind of divide Kowloon side to the new territory side, which is the north part, which in those days that was like considered countryside. Now the new territories, like where Grandmaster Yip Man's grave is, everything's really nice there because all of the new development is in the new territories. So now in Hong Kong, the new territories are really nice. You have lots of new malls and restaurants and everything like that. In the 70s, the new territories was like countryside, or certain areas are just for like rich people who have big estates, or you have family estates in those old villages, right?
People that wear suits and
but
shit.
Basically, the mountains that kind of divide Kowloon with the new territories, that is right at the end of Kowloon. And Kowloon Tong goes right up to those mountains.
Mm.
So you need, you go through like the Lion Rock Tunnel, you're already in Sha Tin, you're in the new territories, right? So Betty is on Beacon Hill Road, and that is right at the foot of those mountains that kind of, so Baptist is like, it's 5 minutes, all right? It's 5 minutes east. 5 minute
run.
5 minutes. I could probably carry Bruce 120 pounds.
Yeah.
And I will tell them, I'll say, Baptist, we need an ambulance here, but I am going to run him over there because his brain is swelling. There's not a lot of time. You need to have the mannitol injection ready to go, okay? And you're going to see me. I'm going to be the freaking crazy white guy in the One Punch Man shirt, all right? Okay. And they'll be like, what is One Punch Man? I'm like, sorry, I forgot it's 1973, okay? Yeah. White guy, beard, glasses. I'm going to be carrying Lei Xiulong in my arms, running like this. You're going to find me because it's going to look crazy. Because I know if you dropped me off right now in front of Betty Ting Pei's apartment, I could run you to Baptist Hospital right now off of my head. That's how well I know Hong Kong.
Ooh.
So I'm like, okay, send the ambulance here, all right? But you'll see me on the road on the way there.
Okay.
Because I'm almost certain I could carry Bruce Lee on my back to Baptist Hospital faster than the ambulance could get there. I can do it. I would get him from Beacon Hill Road there, no problem.
Wow.
I would just, and all that rowing training, I'm just going like this. And I would bring him there, say, have the mannitol injection ready to
go.
He's got ready. He's got brain swelling. We don't know why. We're gonna find out. All I'm right.
Like, how does my would knows all this?
Yeah, I would be like, yeah, and then of course, because time was changed, everyone would be looking at me like, how did you know all of these things? I'm like, dude, I saved him. They're like, yeah, that's what you want us to think. And then I would end up going to jail for the rest of my life. And then there would be no Kung Fu Genius podcast.
No.
So you see, you cannot mess with the time-space continuum.
Yeah, yeah.
Something's going to give. Happening. All right?
Okay. Damn. Okay? So we
and then I'm like, Bruce, hang in there. Bruce, hang in there. And don't worry, I'm going to tell Bobby Baker to burn those letters. Hey, Bobby, burn those letters.
Bobby.
You know your daughter? Yeah. She's going to sell them in the future. Burn those letters. Burn all of them. All of them. Even the ones from Linda. No, especially the ones from Linda.
Especially.
Bobby, burn those letters, all right? I would 100% save Bruce Lee. What are you talking about? And there you go. What's the next question?
Quantum leap is getting really weird.
Huh?
My quantum leap is getting really weird.
Yeah, that's right. The time machine is getting grimier and grimier. I thought it was already grimy when the time machine was the Midtown Tunnel.
Yeah.
And now it's become a toilet after bubble guts.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I don't know.
Third.
That dude Dryzen is creative, man. All right, next up we got Flono McFloonilu.
Okay. I'll take that for a dollar.
I have a question. Back in the day, Bruce Lee told Dan and Asanto there was one thing he had to keep secret. The double pox owl. Why is that? And what is it about the double pox owl that is so special? How do you use it?
Someone wants to know about double pox owl? I'm not going to reveal that on the Kung Fu Genius podcast. All right, next question.
Damn, homie. Nice try, bro. All right, next up we got Roberto Santiago.
Awesome.
Where in the world is Roberto Santiago? Question. C4 Alex, when will you interview Ron Van Cleef on your show?
Wow.
Also, could you please explain what John Dylick theory, power beneath the elbow, is all about?
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Great. Well, Ron Van Cleef's a good friend of ours. We've already mentioned him on the podcast before.
Yeah.
We'd love to have Ron on. So Ron's in Hawaii, so we have a little bit of a time difference.
We might have to go to Hawaii.
Where in Hawaii is he?
I'm not sure. Waikiki.
Waikiki.
Yeah, because I actually might legit be going to Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not introducing you to him. Are you crazy? He's my friend. I'm like, yo, there's this weird Australian who's coming. Oh, wait, are you from New Zealand?
Why?
You know what?
I don't know.
Forget you.
Okay.
I picture. I don't know why I just literally had a flash picture of Ron Van Cleef and my Sea Hang Caillou hanging out doing some wild shit.
That's right.
Yeah, let's all get together. Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah. So, no, we should have him on the podcast. We could do it through Zoom. I'll do it now. We haven't done an interview in a little while. Maybe it's about time. We'd love to have Ron on. He's got some great old stories making movies in Hong Kong back in the day.
He's the Black Dragon.
He knew Sifu Leung-Ting in the early 70s. And
word.
Yeah, so lots of old stories. And I really like that. So plus, he had like a very famous full contact fight where he ended up getting kicked on the ground. Like, he was beating the dude, and then he kind of started clowning around. He got killed. Would love to hear that story as well. I mean, I know this. He's told me the story before, but get him to say it on the podcast. That would be interesting. Roberto asked for Chang Dailek.
Chang Dailek.
But he spells it in the Leung Ting way, so you got to have a Leung Ting book. So Jarn, it's not Jarn. It should be Chang. Chang is elbow. Tai, there's like tai and tai, the two types of tai, and one means underneath, the other one means bottom, all right?
Mm.
And so that type of power, this is essentially what is known in Wing Chun as force from the lower elbow. So some translate as force from the lower elbow, and some translate as force from the bottom of the elbow, meaning your tricep. Either way, whether you tend to translate it more as like low elbow power, where your elbow's in a low position and you launch the punch forward in the very kind of typical Wing Chun way, or you're talking about the power from the bottom of the elbow being a euphemism for triceps, it basically means you punch with your elbow down, all right, and then you extend it there. In a very similar way, like if you're doing dips, if your elbows are flared out you know, it's a lot harder to do it, right? But if you bring your elbows in and you keep your shoulders down, you can really recruit the triceps and the lats in a way that is a lot more efficient in terms of getting more muscle recruitment to lift yourself up and down. And that's essentially from a mechanical perspective, mm-hmm. how the Wing Chun punch works, all right? Before the internal guy goes, no, you've got to sink and, use the floor and the breathe and use the, yeah, okay? Just talking purely mechanical, all right? So, hey, take it easy. All right, okay? You essentially have what we call cham chang lok bo, which is sinking elbow, dropping shoulder, okay? So this is the basic body mechanic. If you lift your shoulder when you try to punch, you are disconnecting that from your lats, so it's not the same type of, you know, engagement with your body, so you want to keep the shoulders down, the elbows low, and punch from this low elbow position. And so this low elbow position is not just important for punching, but it's important for many of our low elbow positions, fuxiao, tansiao, all of these positions that require you to have the elbow low, essentially use this zhang dai, this low elbow power, right? That's pretty much what it means.
Wow.
I actually talk about that in my Chum Q book, about the second form. I actually discuss that particular thing, the power from the bottom of the elbow versus like the low elbow power. So if you want to read more about it, Seek the Bridge.
That's it.
Wing Chun Companion Book Volume 3.
Wow.
Available at citywt.com.
Dope.
Mm-hmm.
Dopeness. All right. Moving right along. I think we got time for maybe one or two more. Let's go into Bella Cheney. Do you believe Yip Man taught the whole art of Wing Chun or even really knew the full art? I've always felt Wing Chun fills a gap between long range and close quarters, which makes me believe there was way more grappling involved in its original incarnation, inception, than what is seen, studied today.
That's a great question. Very speculative. People who are going to tell you, yeah, the original Wing Chun had XYZ, which the modern iteration of Wing Chun doesn't have. You have to then ask a follow-up question, which is, how do you know? The thing with a lot of traditional Chinese martial arts is that, especially if we're just looking at, let's say, Southern Chinese martial arts, a lot of them have similar or identical origins. Not all of them, and some of them are more closely related than others, but many of the Southern martial arts styles, they tend to come from what we call the Hakka tribes, all right? So the Hakka tribes is a nomadic tribe of Chinese people, generally from the north. And with the bridge between the Hakka people and the Southern styles is usually as follows. Most of the what we consider orthodox Southern Shaolin martial arts usually have their sources in Fujian or Fujian in Mandarin, white crane. Now, we're not talking about that pecking white crane that you see from the movies. We're talking about the traditional white crane where you have the Samjin form. And when you look at the Samjin form, you look at Southern style white crane or Wing Chun white crane, not the same wing as us, it's the eternal spring. You see that is kind of the ancestor art of a lot of the Southern styles, whether it's Wing Chun or Hong Kun or other martial arts. And that Fukien white crane also made its way to Okinawa and is also in the DNA of some of the very early Okinawan karate styles. It's maybe not the first, like some people say it's the original one. No, there were already some Okinawan martial arts being developed. This stuff also came in there, and that's why you can see in some traditional Okinawan karate, they actually have the Samjin form in there, and they might do it in a very hard way, but that is literally white crane. So the odd thing is, we often look at karate as being like the opposite of Wing Chun, right? They block and then they punch and it's a harder style and Wing Chun is soft. But actually in the family tree, we are very closely related to Okinawan karate. Wing Chun is very closely related via this white crane link, right? So Fujian is a province, or Fujian province, which is next to Guangdong, the Canton province where Hong Kong is and Fujian and all that. So the question is, well, if most of these Southern martial arts, the ones that are considered more Cantonese martial arts, ones that from Fujian, Hong Kong, things like that, how did this get from Fujian to the Guangdong province, all right? And according to some recent research, there's a book about the Hakka martial arts, which was written by Heng Chao. He's a kind of a martial arts historian in Hong Kong, and he did a whole book on Hakka martial arts, and some of the people in there are people that I know. It's basically this nomadic tribe called the Hakka, which literally means Hak means like the guest. Hak means a guest, and Ga is like okay. family. So these, because they're nomadic, they're considered like guests. They're a guest tribe because they're moving, right? And the Hakka people moved from the north and came to Fujian and picked up these martial arts and mixed some of these martial arts with their own indigenous martial arts. And then they're the ones that migrated it into Guangdong province. So it seems that the link between these old original Fujianese martial arts or the original Fujian white crane most likely made its way to Guangdong via the Hakka people. And that's why most Cantonese martial arts, even if we have white crane in the origin, we also have Hakka influence in there as well. So Wing Chun has some of this Hakka influence. Hongkun clearly has it. And then there's some real pure form Hakka styles like Southern Mantis and Bak Mei and stuff like that. And really interesting stuff, super interesting stuff. So if we want to talk about what would Wing Chun have had before, all right, like because it's easy for people to go like, oh yeah, the original Wing Chun style had all this grappling stuff in it. How do you know this? Because here's a style slightly related to Wing Chun that had some grappling, and here's some old texts, and they said that they have it. But the problem is this is just post hoc confirmation bias, right? The fact that this one style or this one thing had this or whatever, people make these links. They're Wing Chun historians who are basically trying to tell you that Wing Chun is originally Tai Chi. Wing Chun is originally a northern style. And when you look at the evidence for this, it's tenuous at best. It's just like they pluck a couple things here and you see, here's the connection. There are no real reliable written records to say this. You can believe it, and that's your right to believe it, but it's really highly speculative, okay? If you want to have an idea of what maybe an older variant of Wing Chun had or has, you need to look at White Crane and what they did. And you need to look at some of the other Hakka martial arts and see what they did. And then you can kind of start to split the difference a little bit. And I don't think that it had a lot of... And again, what does grappling mean? Because in the very basic sense of the word, Wing Chun has grappling. We have a neck pulling hand. We have Kam Lhasa, literally grappling hand. Double grabs and sweeps and trips and things like that. Is that grappling? Or are you talking about underhook and you know, body clinch and takedown? Like, so where is the line between like simple grabs and pulls and things like that being under the guise of grappling? Or you're talking about something that in your mind resembles Brazilian jiu-jitsu just done by Chinese people hundreds of years ago, all right? Because I think that's what people are kind of looking for. And you can look in Chinese wrestling and see all these things and see parallels to modern grappling. But modern grappling through jiu-jitsu and stuff like this is highly, highly developed and relatively... fresh in terms of the way they've taken the older grappling models and improved upon it, right? So when people say, oh, the older Wing Chun had all this grappling stuff, and then you're thinking like, the older Wing Chun stuff had like John Donaher's leg locking game in there. Like, I mean, like, where is the line for what you consider grappling, not grappling, right? So I don't know about that.
Okay.
I really don't know and can't say. But I can tell you, if I wanted you to believe that Wing Chun originally had XYZ, I could easily look at this lineage, that lineage, put together a connection and spin a yarn and tell you with 100% certainty how Wing Chun was originally Tai Chi and had grappling and had all this other stuff. But that is just confirmation bias. I don't know how anybody can call themselves a martial arts historian and say that stuff with 100%, like with a straight face as if it's 100% accurate. At best, most of what we know about Chinese martial arts, we know more about the recent history. The older history is a hot, burning basket of garbage and hearsay and stories and repurposed, plagiarized fiction.
Mm-hmm.
We got another one?
I think we got one more for All us. Right. Man. All right. Next up, we got Michael F. Douglas.
Okay.
After Yip Man moved to HK in 49, did he train with any other high-level kung fu guys? Or did he only train with his students for the last 23 years of his life.
Okay, so we're talking about Ip Man moving to Hong Kong, fleeing China in 1949. When he's in his mid to late 50s, all right? So is he signing up at the local gym in Hong Kong and training with a bunch of bros in his 60s, all right? So there's speculation, all right, that the Leung Bik story that Ip Man had learned from Leung Bik when he was younger, in his early 20s.
Right.
Because remember, he went essentially to university in Hong Kong. And the story is when he was a young university student, he met Leung Bik's son, all right? So the son of his Sigong, and this guy is Leung Jan's son, sorry. Leung Jan's son, his name is Leung Bik. And then Leung Bik taught him a more refined version of Wing Chun, and then that's where his Wing Chun kind of got upgraded and so on, right? So it's like he learned the original Wing Chun from his Sifu Chan Hua Sun, and then from his Siing Mm Chong So, and then later in Hong Kong got refinements and theory and more advanced stuff from Leung Bik, and that kind of completed his training, right? And then he goes back to Fatsan, presumably, let's say he's 23, 24, something like that. And then until the time he is in his mid-50s, then he has to go to Hong Kong and he has to start teaching Wing Chun to earn a living because he doesn't really have many marketable skills. So that's a 30-year period right there, right?
Between 30-year gap.
Yeah, when he finished learning Wing Chun to when he had to start teaching it, right? So from what we know, he had practiced his Wing Chun regularly, and he taught a few students, like Lun Gai, Guok Fu, casually to keep up his own skills. And because in the traditional sense, if you have the skill of Wing Chun, Qi Xiao, you've learned it, you've learned the skill, what do you do with it? You continue to practice it and refine it. I think the mistake some people make is that they think learning is always about accumulating. All right. Now, to a certain degree, we all have gaps in our knowledge about things we're good at, things we're not good at. It's actually a good thing, especially nowadays with all the resources we have on YouTube and things like that. You can look around and see what these people are doing, what these people are doing, get some inspiration and improve it. Right. But the downside to that is the modern information age has given people the idea, I think, and it's just my opinion, that getting good is a matter of accumulating a bunch of shit. All right. Learn this Wing Chun thing for 3 years. You learn the forms really fast. You learn some Qi Xiao. And then start mixing it with this other thing. And then when you're dissatisfied with that, go and look at this thing and learn that thing over there. And then when you're dissatisfied with that, go over there, right? And then what ends up happening is you have these people who think like it's just about accumulating all of these random things. Like I say, going to a buffet. And every time you get a plate, like if you're at a really good buffet, right, you should eat a certain type of thing at once. Right? You shouldn't like go and get like the rice and the noodles and the seafood and that thing and pile it on your plate. You'll get nothing but indigestion. You get a grouping. Then you go back, you eat it. You want to get something else, you go back to the buffet, you get another type of grouping of food, right? But people think that learning martial arts is just about applying all and learning all this different random crap and piling it on there as if the thing is not going to give you indigestion.
Okay.
If you have a martial arts style that teaches you to get close and stick and keep pressure on your opponent, are you necessarily enhanced in learning that skill and applying that skill that you've been doing for 20 years by suddenly jumping back and diving into a stance and doing something, let's say, from Choi Lei Fut or another style? Well, you might, but you also might kind of ruin the thing that you're good at because now you're mixing things that don't really work well together.
Okay.
All right. Again, my analogy about building a car by bolting on random car parts that don't work. You might make a car that drives, but do you want to drive it? All right. Truck wheels in the back, Corvette wheels in the front, frame of a Jeep, all right, engine of a Fiat. All right. Spoiler from a Toyota Supra. Yeah, you could put all those things together and make the thing move, but would you want to? All right. Okay. So sometimes in these questions, I feel that, and it could just be me, could be my neuroses, could be the way I look at things, could be my own bias. But when I hear questions like this, it's almost like, did he continue learning some stuff so that he got better? Or did he just kind of stay the same because he didn't learn from anyone else? All right. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like saying, did Cus D'Amato not get better as a boxing coach because he didn't continually keep learning from other boxing coaches as he got older? Or did he become a better coach over time by coaching more?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and getting more experience. So I understand the need for learning new things. We should always strive to learn new things. I always read up on martial arts, magazines, books. I read Wing Chun books from other Wing Chun Sifus who have a different approach, or sometimes I disagree with them entirely, but I will still read their book and make sure I understand all their points. Not go, this is a bunch of, like, everyone who does Wing Chun, they buy a Wing Chun book from an, it's a bunch of crap. That's how you stand in. No, I read everyone's book in a very fair way. I try to absorb their worldview into how Wing Chun works so that it helps me understand not just that they do it differently, but why do they do it differently and why do they think about it, right? You need to apply that when you look at anything else, right? Because that's how you really get to absorb it. Sometimes I watch videos from other Sifus or other approaches, or I list what grapplers are showing or whatever, like, because what I feel is this allows me to enhance the way I teach Wing Chun to my own students. And this is a huge thing we have now with the internet and YouTube. But I don't think that the secret to every famous martial artist's success is simply accumulating more shit, okay? It's about getting really, really good at stuff, refining those basics, and expanding upon them through experience. And sometimes that experience is training with other people or seeing what other people do. But that is not necessarily a matter of accumulation. It's not about, like Bruce Lee said, it's not about a daily increase, but a decrease. We need to hack away at the inessentials, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's always been this rumor that Yip Man didn't really learn from Leung Bik, that Leung Bik is a fairy tale character, didn't really exist or whatever. What actually happened is when he came to Hong Kong in 1949, eventually he hooked up with some of the Wang Chun, meaning the Eternal Spring people in Dai Tak Lan, right? And he was training with these guys and exchanging stuff. And that's where he was able to develop some stuff from the knife form and other things like that, right? And this rumor did not exist during Yip Man's lifetime. Mm. And people point at some weird photos of Bruce Lee next to Chu Chong Man and say, see, they knew each other. And like Yip Man putting his hand on Chu Chong Man's shoulder, like, oh, see the reverence that Yip Man held from, like, these are literally normal gestures any adult male would have to another adult male who showed up to their banquet. But people go, see, that is not the proof. You know how many knuckleheads have photos with me? All right? And it's like, you can go, I die tomorrow. It's like, see, this guy clearly learned from Alex because he's got his arm around him at Home Depot. All right? Okay? Not the case. All right? So there's a lot of confirmation bias about that stuff. And then, you know, it's normal in the Chinese martial arts circle that most Sifu are friendly with the other Sifu in the martial arts circle. That was one thing that kind of blew me away when I first started going to Hong Kong and spending more time with Sifus, right? Here in the States, the Chinese martial arts community is smaller, but it's also a little bit more separate. So in many cases, every school and every lineage is kind of an island unto their own. Mm-hmm. So like especially here in New York, like the Moyet guys didn't necessarily mix in with this other Wing Chun school, and these Kung Fu guys didn't mix in with these Kung Fu guys because everyone's kind of like, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, colors. All right. Okay. And then when I went to Hong Kong, it kind of blew me away, like, that all the Sifus, all the Wing Chun Sifus, they all knew each other because Hong Kong's kind of a small place. Right. And sometimes they would have yum cha with each other and converse. And then, like, and people from lineages where their students and grand students in the international segment of their associations fight with each other. And here you see the two heads of these, like, literally dim-summing it away and having a good time, right? Okay. And then I was like, okay, there's definitely a kind of a martial arts community camaraderie thing. And then, of course, you get that lesson where you go, oh, these guys all really know each other, right? Like, wow, that's incredible. I didn't realize how familiar everyone actually was to each other, right? And then you learn that, and as a Westerner, you're like, wow, this is kind of cool, martial arts community. And then they separate, and then it's like, oh, that guy, you know, his student is no good, and blah, 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 blah. And then you hear all this stuff, and you go, oh, no, they still do talk shit about each other. Yes. They just don't do it to each other's faces.
Right, right, right.
All right? And then you're like, yeah, you know, it is kind of the same, but sometimes in Hong Kong, they just pretend, you know, bay mean, show face.
Show face.
But it's a bit of an act sometimes, to be quite honest. For some, not. Some do it in an open and honest way, and others, it's just a public gesture, right? Face-saving gesture.
Wow.
So there's been speculation. It came out in the 2000s. That Yip Man was secretly learning from Chu Chong Man, and who was the head of the Wing Chun style at the time. Now, look, man, I'm a freaking I'm a freaking dude in 2021. I wasn't there. I wasn't even a piece of protein in the 1950s. All right?
Protein?
Okay. I wasn't even a piece of protein in my dad's hamburger. All right? In the 1950s. All right? I was nothing. I wasn't sugar in his coffee. Yeah. I wasn't anything yet.
Wasn't even thought
of. The molecules that make up the Kung Fu Genius at that point was like half in dirt, some in the stars, whatever. Like these things had not assembled yet. All
right. Pops was doing his thing at that
time. So for me to say like, nah, let me tell you exactly what happened. Yeah. All right. Would be ridiculous. The problem is, and I say this again and again, the burden of proof rests on the person making the claim. If you want to make a claim that Yip Man secretly learned from Xu Zhongmen, and that's where he got some of his footwork and some of this stuff that later made it into the Ba Jiam Do or whatever, right? That's a claim. You need to substantiate that claim with evidence, and that evidence cannot be the two of them were in the same room at a banquet once in Hong Kong, because there's a photo of the Hong Kong Chinese Martial Art Association from the late 60s, early 70s. Where you have nearly every single sifu that teaches any style. Yip Man was there, Quan Ta King, Han from Enter the Dragon. Yeah. Literally everyone is in the same photo. So by that same reasoning, you could look at that photo and say everyone in that photo learned from everyone in that photo. Don't show me a photo of the two of them in the same room and Yip Man being friendly with a guy as proof that that guy taught him something. And then, of course, the thing is then later some of the Wing Chun guy go, oh, they actually defeated Yip Man. Look, no one is invincible. I'm not saying Yip Man is unable to be defeated, right? But we're talking, have you ever spent time around old Chinese gentlemen? I'll tell you one thing. It's very rare for a man in his 60s to decide to go and train with other kung fu bros and, hey, let's go and swap it out and slap each other with the hot fists and see how this works out. Yeah, Yip Man in that advanced stage in his life is going to go, oh, let's do some friendly chi sao and let's punch you. Get the out of here, okay? That literally makes no sense. I know you want it to make sense because that's your style, but you have no evidence for it. Mm-hmm. And some old Chinese guy telling you a story over dim sum is not evidence, okay? I want people who swallow all of this kung fu history wholesale because the person telling them is someone they're learning from or someone that they like. This, the plural of anecdotes is not data. Mm. Data is facts. The anecdotes, stories, hearsay, shit people say, like this whole podcast.
Yeah.
All right? The plural of anecdotes does not equal data. Okay? So if you want to make a claim, whether it's Yip Man learned from Xu Zhongmen, William Cheung was the only one to inherit a secret style through Leung Baek through Yip Man, okay? Or any of these things, okay? So-and-so is the only person to learn this from this person here. Only these person, you can make all of those claims, all right? But if you want to stand by, you need to substantiate it with facts. Now, I admit some of these things are hard to substantiate because maybe there is no hard evidence for these kind of things. So then you need to call it what it is, a freaking story told over dim sum.
Yeah.
All right? And that's when I'm just telling you stories. I say, hey, this is a story I heard. Like, I don't know. I don't have any skin in the game whether this thing is true or not. And Kung Fu people need to be more honest about whether you're just telling stories that could be true, might not be true, or you're actually saying that something is something. All right? Like, this is legit. And the reason why I tend to, and I don't have any skin in the game, but the reason why I tend to doubt a little bit the story of Xu Zhongmen is because there was an incident that happened between one of Yip Man's students and people from that lineage. I'm not going to say who, but Yip Man's second student, or some say first student, all right, which pisses off all the Leung Sung people, Lok Yu, punched someone in the Wang Chun lineage, right, in the mouth. And this was very early on in the beginnings of Yip Man Wing Chun. And it was a bit of an ugly incident which caused a little bit of an issue between them. Yip Man dies, no one says anything. Xu Zhongmen later dies. And now suddenly in the 2000s, oh, did you know that Yip Man learned from Xu Zhongmen? I'm like, the same lineage with Yip Man's student punched that guy in the, and I'm not gonna say who they punched, in the mouth. Okay, it can happen. Crazier stuff has happened. But I need to hear some. It's not up to me to debunk it. It's up to them to literally tell me how this can be true. All right? Because the fact that someone told you over dim sum, okay, doesn't make it true. I've also heard some shit over dim sum. And about 5% of it is worthy of repeating. Okay? Most of it is just pabulum.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say about that. All right, everyone, what did you think about today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius? And what kind of topics would you like me to talk about on a future episode? Go ahead and comment below. Don't forget to like and subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius. And I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a Kung Fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seekung. And I produce masters. You surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor. Wait, wait, what's going on with your hair?
What do you mean what's going on?
What's happening with your hair back there?
Both of you in the A. Yo, Dre, how you... Is this thing on? I didn't hear it. That's why I normally hear myself in there.
You were moaning and complaining about being deaf like on Monday, so I turned your headphones down slightly. But I can tell.
Whose show is this? Dare you turn my mic? Whose show is this?
What?
It's the KFG, not the TFG.
I had like a little thing in my throat. All
budget ass pit bull.
All right, Pit. Lots of gems. Lots of hook punches, lots of, I ain't gonna tell you what the double pox sow is about, homie. Let's get to it.
Wow.
Not bad.
I think it's passable.
One take, Drake.
Well, you only said hook punches, not double hook punches.
Should we give it a pass?
No.
All right, do it.
Do it again?
Yeah, do it again.
Oh, shit, man. Pitbull has funny songs, man. Yeah, and he has mad Miami chicks around him.
Yeah. In every video. I know you want me to do the intro.
I know you want me.
So do that intro. Yeah.
I know you want me like I want you.